You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Okay, we're back with Mike Ingram, who's a strategist at BGC Partners, and with Sean Richards, who is from Not a Yes Man Economics. Good afternoon, Sean. How are you
doing? Good afternoon. I'm well, thank you.
Right, plenty of stuff going on in the world of economics, i.e. the IMF telling us what's going on. Do we believe them?
No, there's various issues here. For example, it's laughable that they think that they can change their growth forecast by 0.2%, when in fact they've been miles wrong virtually every time they've done it. I think Reuters calculated out yesterday that 17 of their last 22 forecasts of this sort have been completely wrong. I don't know if that means the other five are worse or a bit better, but you get the idea.
So what are they trying to achieve? What is it just to say we're here, or what expertise or what basis do they have in terms of pontificating? Aren't they just basically like a bank? And they don't, I mean, they're just there to lend to distressed countries?
Like so many official institutions, they use this as a way of sort of establishing credibility. Broadcasting organisations like to publish something and say it's from the IMF and it sounds good. Once you go below that and you look to the reality of their actual shocking track record, as I just described, or even worse, when they do things these days, take a look at Ukraine or Greece. So the reality is rather different. So the surface, very different to what's under the water.
So how does that make you feel? You know, you're from Not a Yes Man Economics, which implies that you're a bit of a cynic of the whole, or the current, the status quo, the way things work. I mean, how do you think it should be changed, and how can it be improved?
I think that there are various ways that it could be improved. In fact, the IMF, in my opinion, has been going the wrong way. And what I mean by that was, back in the day, if we go back a decade, it was an organisation that sorted out trade problems. Didn't have a perfect record, but in general, it went to places, helped. One of the ways it helped, and this is one of the modern era problems, was it usually prescribed a devaluation, depreciation, a lower currency, however you want to call that. In more recent years, politicians have taken it over. They've shifted it from something that deals with trade problems to fiscal problems. Oh, look, just in time for Europe. Oh, look, the people that have done it are from Europe, specifically French. So it's completely changed. And this is the cause of the problem right now, in my opinion. In fact, I think the tasks it has now are mostly insoluble. So it needs the idea of everyone saying how good it is all the time. Because reality is completely the opposite.
But you say politicians have taken over the IMF, but is it ironic that the governments themselves aren't actually playing an active role in formulating economic policy either? Because they've obviously, monetary policy is the domain of central banks to the nth degree, and fiscal policy, say, has been outsourced to bodies such as the IMF. So what is it left with the politicians to do? Just open bridges with massive, sized scissors and stuff like that.
And of course, there's another irony here that if you looked at this in terms of France, who was the finance minister, Christine Lagarde, who now has more power over France's finances and charge of the IMF probably than she ever had as finance minister.
So it's a bigger, she's got a much bigger mandate, which is obviously great for her, but is it the IMF, is it going to change? I mean, as you said, it's got these insoluble problems. What's its future? I mean, isn't somebody going to say, well, actually, we don't need the IMF anymore, or it's not fit for purpose? Or?
Sadly, the reverse. I think we'll see more of it for the very reason that it allows politicians to subcontract out. In the UK, if people recall, this started with the famous Paxman interview with Michael Howard, when he asked him the same question, I think it was 18 times. And the essence behind that was that Michael Howard had put an official in charge of something so they could take the blame and he could go, you're fired, in Alan Sugar, Lord Sugar manner. And then, of course, he was still there. Politicians these days are playing the same game. And at the minute in Europe, they have two things to do. One is blame Mario Draghi in the central bank. The other, in various of the places where things are going wrong, the IMF's involved as well. So they've got two choices. So,
to what extent would you say that these, you know, dubious forecasts coming out of the IMF, though, are also a broader statement about the state of the economics profession? Because, of course, the IMF isn't alone in having crappy forecasting. I mean, the Bank of England's not exactly, hasn't exactly covered itself in glory over recent years either. I mean, you know, is it not true that in the sort of a post-crisis environment, the economic models, which are largely the same models which took us into the crisis face first, are still in place, and they can't explain what's going on in the global economy?
No, by definition, I completely agree that what these places are using is flawed. One of the reasons we know it's flawed is that we got into this mess in the first place, yep. And now 7 or 8 years down the road, they've learned virtually nothing. There was a big review at the Bank of England on this. I think it, before the Office of Budget Responsibility began, I thought the Bank of England was clearly the worst forecasting organisation in the world. It had bottom place, top place, however you want to put it. It's had a review, very, for those that remember the TV series Yes, Minister Star, which conclude changes need to be made and all this, that and the other, and then they'll be made at some point, whenever, after we're all dead, something like that. And then they carry on pretty much as before. Mm. And we find exactly the same problems. And where the issue with economic forecasting is, almost anyone can do it when things are quite calm.
Yes.
At the minute, shouldn't be a bad time for them. Most economies have got at least a little bit of growth rumbling on. They can sort of forecast that and it won't go horribly wrong. But like the credit crunch showed, the minute you get a lurch, then they're completely lost at sea and a waste of time. And next time it'll be the same.
But isn't there a problem that we have? But why do we actually need them? I mean, look, obviously we survive. We've survived without them being correct. You know, putting the thing, the argument the other way around. Why do we actually need them?
I suspect most people take no notice at all, and I'd recommend that. The IMF needs them because in various places, and here it really comes the real problem, these forecasts aren't set on what they think's going to happen. They're set on what they need to happen for what they're doing elsewhere. So, for example, when the IMF is forecasting growth for Greece, Italy, Portugal, all these places, Ukraine, it's a long list around the world, that's set to make its numbers work, not the other way around. It's very similar with the Bank of England. It's not going to sit there and go, oh, we think inflation's going to be 4% in 2 years' time, because people would then be going, well, why aren't you doing anything? So the forecasts are set for the future they want, not because they, even they, don't believe it.
Right, the other big issue of the day going into June, obviously, is the Brexit or otherwise the EU referendum. We're getting all sorts. I mean, that, just after following on from this, where, you know, you've got some dodgy forecasts, you're getting completely, you know, plucking out of thin air forecasts about what would happen if the UK stays in the EU or not. Is there anything we can guess?
I think that they're little bits in terms of changes and things like that, and perhaps with some countries in Europe there'll be a bit of dislocation of trade, but lots of things are unknown. What will the currency do? If you actually believed in sort of fair value in currency markets, probably most of the fall should have happened beforehand. So I think most people have figured out now that the voting's getting quite tight and it could happen, maybe probably from possibly. And so there's the thing. So actually, a lot of the panic and scare stories are exactly that. Might get a move on the day. But I rather suspect, actually, personally, we might get the same move, whatever the vote is, for the reasons I've just explained.
But the other point is just, for instance, I mean, the main, the best argument to stay in is that if we stay in, there's no uncertainty as far as all the agreements and all the business. And, you know, we know it's a known quantity. If we don't, then that's the problem. We have uncertainty, and therefore we should stay in because we avoid any uncertainty. But doesn't that not factor in the pain or the damage that we're having from being involved in the EU, the cost and the sort of the chains that we're in from Brussels, red tape, bureaucracy, which are invisible at the moment?
Well, there are also a lot of commitments we make. For example, I was looking at the numbers for the European Investment Bank. Now, the new, I think it's crackpot, but anyway, whatever people might think of it, the new Juncker plan for investment infrastructure. Who's one of the main people backing it? Us, who are nothing to do with it. This is the problem with this. So those that make the certainty argument is, a lot of the certainty is bad things. Plenty of these countries' relationships are our friends. Portugal, in English terms, is the oldest ally. So these situations sort of remain. So there's uncertainty everywhere. If it was certain in Europe, places like Portugal, Italy, Greece, perhaps France, wouldn't be in the mess that they're in.
But isn't a lot of the Brexit debate as well a bit of a false proposition? Because there's the argument that, well, there's all this sort of vortex of uncertainty and the sky's going to fall and blah, blah, blah. And it'll all be all apocalyptically bad on if we vote to go out against the status quo. But the status quo within Europe is not sustainable either, because either there's got to be some form of fiscal stroke political union or the euro as a project is going to fail. So either Europe is economically viable and less democratic, at least from my perspective, or it remains an economic basket case. So this idea that somehow, you know, the status quo is sustainable or it's not going to go in a different direction one way or the other, I think is ludicrous, because there is a dynamic there and it's an inexorable evolution.
Yes, for them, for various of the issues that they have, one of the solutions is a federal government, which is plainly the way they're heading, and that's what they want.
Yeah.
So, and that's part of the issue here, I think, because that by definition means that future is uncertain as well, doesn't it? So it's two competing futures that are both uncertain.
We shall see. Sean Richards, not a yes man in economics, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you.